A lot of people say the cushioning is an important factor, and if the cushioning is not good, you have injuries. There are no studies that conclusively show that this is true. 1970, 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, 2020. And you look at all the studies that have been done, you don't see a substantial difference in the injury frequency.
Hello everyone, this is Vikas and you are listening to Run With Vipage. This is episode number 122 and today we are discussing about foot biomechanics. When we talk about lower extremities biomechanics, one of the names that comes to mind that has pioneered details in and around feet, its performances, various components and variables that let it perform the way it performs, that is of Dr. Benonig. Dr. Benonig is a professor emeritus at University of Calgary, who was born in Switzerland, where he did his PhD as well, and later he was invited by University of Calgary to teach. His name is synonymous to almost everything that you read and know about foot biomechanics. You will see from his research that thousands of, tens and thousands of research citations have been around his work that he has done in the last several decades. The discussion today is, though, very basic. Why basic is because that is what the fundamental of performance is, isn't it? We all talk about one step at a time. And if we are able to perfect that one step each time, and we are able to move from point A to point B efficiently without getting injured, the job is done, isn't it? And that is why we start from the very basic of what are feet, their role, the arch and its role, and what happens if you pronate or supinate. How do we look at shoes as endurance athletes, among many other things? And I thought it will be important for us to break down all of these concepts with none other than Dr. Nick, who will talk you through what do you need to know about your feet before you get started on a great performance journey. Even though you have been an endurance athlete for a while, you will see that there are so many concepts and information that you are listening to for the very first time. I want your close attention to listening to Dr. Benonig as he talks you through the sea of information about feet, its biomechanics, movement, and everything that it involves for you to perform better. Let's welcome Dr. Nick to the show. Dr. Benonig, welcome to Run With Vipage. It's our weekly podcast and it's an absolute honor to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Your research is something most runners, researchers have grown getting guided from, and we look at for number of issues when it comes to movement for biomechanics, and it is what an honor to be able to have you and talk for a few minutes about your decades of research. I wanted to request you if we can start from the very start, that is, what exactly is biomechanics?
Biomechanics is the study of forces acting on the human body and in the human body, and results produced by these forces.
And foot mechanics, will it be part of it, part of the entire human body biomechanics?
That's correct. You know, the foot is the first location where the force comes into the body, and there are some reactions and some reactions to the forces, and if the forces are too high or wrong, then we have some effects.
And is this, I'm sorry, because I'm a layperson, I will have these questions, so please bear with me for a few minutes. And then we also see gait being used pretty frequently among runners, that, hey, you got injured because your gait may not be right, etc. Is this also connected with the biomechanics? And how will that be, just for our understanding?
Yes. Yeah, if the forces are, let's say the forces are too high, and they are consistently too high on one element, let's say a tendon, then we get tendonitis. And therefore we have an injury, which is a running injury, and that's a result of the biomechanics on the foot and the tendon.
Right. Then the next, very next question that comes to our mind is, then is there a right way to move? And we as recreational runners, when we start, because we have learned to walk and learned to run as we were growing up, we start running whichever way it seems the preferred way for us. So the question is there a preferred way to move in terms of running to avoid these injuries, for example?
Yeah, you know, let's take a basketball game. If you play basketball, you have thousands of different movements that you can do. So is there a right movement to do? I don't think so. I think you can do different movements and you can do them right. You can do movements in one direction. You can do movements fast or slow, big steps with short steps and so on. It's not right or wrong. It's just different. As a matter of fact, some scientists suggest that you should do many different movements, not always the same movement. You know, let's take a little child. When a little child learns to run and to walk, you don't see that child doing always the same thing. You see that child doing many different things. It learns how to move. It learns how to move in one and the other way. And that's what we should do the whole life.
Right. True. And I wish things were that straightforward as people grow. We become sedentary. A lot of times people take running as a sport, not because they are going to do it professionally, but because they want to take some weight off, or their doctor has suggested a cardiovascular exercise, etc. And then as soon as they start, very quickly they realize that they are getting injured. There are aches and pains that are coming. And so that's when the stress starts to come, how to address these.
Whenever you change what you typically do, the danger that you get injured is very high. So, for instance, when soccer players play indoors and then in summer they go outdoors, that's the time when most of the soccer players have injuries. That's exactly the same thing for a runner. If somebody has not run at all and starts now running, that person produces forces on the system and in the system and produces high forces sometimes, and especially when they do always the same thing, they produce repetitive forces that are the reason for the injuries. So if you don't want to have injuries at the beginning when you start running, start very slowly. Have short distances, have a lot of breaks, and only when you feel comfortable, increase the intensity a little bit, but only a little bit, and go very slowly forward.
Right, right. The how about the foot landing in terms of injury? And this is a question that comes twofold. One is when people start to have pains or aches, and they start to look at what could be the causes of it. That is, whether heel foot landing or midfoot or forefoot, any of these have any reasons for them to get injured or susceptible to being injured.
You know, when you land, then you produce forces in the human body. When you land on the heel, let's say like that, you land on the heel, you have a force acting here, and the forces that you produce internally are in the front, so the tibialis anterior, for instance. When you land now on the forefoot, you change that, and when you land on the forefoot, the force is acting here, and you have high forces at the ankle joint. That means whatever type of landing you use, you produce different forces internally. If you have forces, if you have pain and discomfort in the Achilles tendon, it doesn't make sense that you land on the forefoot. It's much easier to land on the rear foot because then the forces in the Achilles tendon are very low. So based on the landing, these forces are different. And when you land on the rear foot, you load more the structures in the forefoot. When you land on the heel, when you land on the forefoot, you load more the structures that you have on the rear foot.
Understood. So this seems pretty obvious. Now, it also is influenced by shoe selection and choices they make. The shoes that they purchase as runners is a function of what's available in the market, and a lot of times the cushion, the heel to toe drop, etc., could also be influencing possibly where they're landing first, right? So could that also be an influence basis the shoe selection?
Yeah, a lot of people say that. A lot of people say the cushioning is an important factor, and if the cushioning is not good, you have injuries. There are no studies that conclusively show that this is true. What we have, that's an interesting situation. You know, we thought at the beginning that cushioning is the most important thing, and we wanted to prove that if you don't have good cushioning, that you have injuries. We were not able to prove that. And there are two major reasons why that is not the case. First of all, if you do the statistics, you don't get more injuries. The people that have bad or not as good cushioning, they have injuries that are not more often than people that have good cushioning. Secondly, the cushioning affects the internal forces. If you land on the heel and you have high cushioning, the internal impact forces are very small. The internal active forces, that are the forces that are during takeoff, are much higher, are about five times higher. So if the forces are the reason for injuries, the five times higher forces may be the reason, and that's during takeoff, not during landing.
Right. So then will this mean that one can go and select any pair of shoes that fits them well to stay safe when they're running on the road, etc., and then dial into them?
Yeah. You know, if you take the statistics and you look at the difference of injuries 1970, 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, 2020, and you look at all the studies that have been done, you don't see a substantial difference in the injury frequency.
Wow.
Now, the shoes have changed in that time dramatically. A shoe in 2020 is much better than a shoe in 1970. No question about that. And still, there is no difference in the injury frequency, which suggests that it's not primarily the shoe that produces those injuries. It's something else. Right.
And that something else could be related to training, could be related to starting out too fast, too early, and some of the unknowns as well, right?
Intensity, time of recovery, things like that are much more important than the shoe.
Right. You also said that when you land, maybe the impact forces are not as much, but the active forces as you're taking off are, say, up to five times higher. In that case, could there be a better way of selecting shoe? Could there be other shoes, depending on their structure, that will help reduce the active forces or not?
Yeah, you know when we walk, when we run, we are built that we can have high forces during these movements. That's not a real problem. So it would be wrong to say, now I want to buy a shoe where the forces on the forefoot are lower. That would be wrong. If you have injuries, then think first about the intensity of your training, the recovery, and if you look at those two things, you can solve most of the injury.
Understand. Thank you for that. One other related point, sir, is after you land, then your feet movement, whether it rolls inwards, outwards, remains slightly stable, has also been considered, rather talked about, where the shoe companies, they suggest specific shoes on the basis of how you pronate or supinate, etc., upon landing. What will be your opinion on that? Is this something that also matters?
Yeah, you know, it's exactly the same story as the impact story. At the beginning, we thought impact is bad and we have to do something to get rid of impact. And we thought pronation is bad and we have to do something to get rid of pronation. And it's a nice story, because in the story you can look at the foot and say, oh, you pronate, and therefore you have to have a stability shoe. Now, again, the studies that have been done, if you look at all the studies that have been done, there is no evidence that pronation is a reason for injuries. No evidence.
Wow.
That's kind of, you know, it's disappointing. We thought we knew everything. And then if you go to a podiatrist, I mean, most of them will tell you pronation is something bad. As a matter of fact, the study that had the most feet, total, I think, about 1,800 feet, came to the result that those people with the most pronation had significantly less injuries than all the other ones. So pronation is something that is good. So don't worry about that.
It's not as a spicy news for many practitioners and companies, for sure. When we hear that pronation is not bad, I remember going to one of the orthopedics, and he quickly suggested me that I need to have an insole in my shoes, because he said you have almost flat feet, and I was very hesitant. At the end, he suggested, why don't you take it on a trial and then you purchase later. And next day I had blisters. I could not even walk after that. So it was not a great experience for me. But I do see that people keep purchasing insoles for their shoes.
And expensive insoles.
Very, very expensive.
You know, I mean, in our country, they are $400-$500.
Some of those brands are here as well. And they're extremely expensive, more expensive than the shoes itself.
Yeah. And, you know, pronation is not a problem. As a matter of fact, the rolling inwards and rolling outwards of the foot during ground contact is something completely natural.
Okay.
We had several studies where those people that had the highest prosupination were the people that had the least number of injuries.
Wow. I think then the message that I'm getting from you, sir, that is, we just worry too much about what type of feet we have, what type of biomechanics we have. It's rather better to just get started, start slow, get coaching and progress and enjoy in the process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Now that we are at this point, I wanted your guidance on the topic that we just discussed, but to in slightly details, that is, in India specifically, we have seen flat feet being almost a cause of curse in many ways, where soon as you have flat feet, as you're growing, the military selection and various other things become a cause of concern in their medical tests and physical tests, as well as when you're running, we are always suggested that, hey, you are getting injured because of flat feet. Is flat feet, is it a situation? Is it a condition? And just wanted your help in understanding what exactly it is, and do people need to actually be anyhow be concerned about this this situation?
Yeah, let's start a little bit earlier. Why do we have an arch in the foot? Why do we have that? You have any idea?
In my understanding, the arch is because as you land, it is dampening the impact with which you are landing, and it's working as a shock absorber or something of that sort, but maybe I'm totally wrong.
That's what people tell you. Now, let's think about that. The impact lasts how many milliseconds?
Less than 50, 40, 50, I would say.
Yeah, it's maybe 10, 20 milliseconds. The compression of the arch is one highest at the beginning or a mid-stance or at the end?
I would think in mid, yeah.
In mid-stance. Okay. Mid-stance, that's about when you run normally 200 milliseconds. So they tell you that an impact which is finished in about 20 milliseconds will be damped by something that happens 200 milliseconds later. Does that make sense to you?
No, now it doesn't.
It doesn't. So the reason that you gave, what the reason is that we have an arch in the foot, has nothing to do with damping of the impact.
Right.
That's a very stupid statement that people make. So whatever else could be the reason that we have an arch in the foot?
What it could be, I'm...
What did we do a few million years ago?
We were running around, climbing the trees and eating. So we were...
Would there an arch in the foot be helpful?
I think I would say that to climb the tree, it's almost like a grip.
You're exactly right. Because we used to do something else.
Got it.
So the arch of the foot is something that we have because we were climbing on the trees. And we still have it, but, I mean, it's unnecessary.
Got it.
That means the flat foot may be even further advanced in the evolution than the high arch foot. There's no reason that somebody can tell me why a flat foot should be bad.
And it's so simple to understand as you explain that now. It is possibly not even needed.
That I would say that. It's no advantage to have these arches. There's a lot of friction that takes place and unnecessary friction. You don't need to have these relative movements of these little bones in the foot. We don't even need the whole construction of the foot to move. Elephants don't have them either. You know, elephants don't have the metatarsophalangeal joints.
Right.
I mean, they have one that you could call like that, but that doesn't have a function. And they move nicely and even sometimes elegantly. You know, what we need to for locomotion, for running, for instance, we need something, a cushion there, and then we need the tibia. But we don't need all these structures underneath. Now we have them, and we have to find a solution to run with them. But the solution is not to say everything that is not a big arch is something that is a problem.
This is like the best news.
It's nice, isn't it?
It is. And I want to also read up further about it because it's just so exciting as I hear from you. And this is the very first time I've ever heard as you asked me a question and as I started to think through it. I remember in my childhood, we lived in a village, and so we'll climb up the trees and down the trees, and there were some of these trees which were very slippery, and we'll use our feet to hold and then take the support and then climb up the next step. And it became a lot easier. And that's what I was thinking as you were asking me that question. That's how I was able to answer that. And it makes so much sense. Now, another, this question is something that I get from a lot of elderly folks, as well as a lot younger. I was with a very senior police officer recently, and we were speaking, and I was suggesting to him that you should take up running, and rather actively. And he suggested that if he runs, he gets a knee injury and knee pain, and this is something that I hear from every second person. And I wanted your guidance on in understanding, is knee injury or knee pain directly related due to running or walking or not?
That's a difficult question to answer. I mean, you know, people that don't run have knee pain. People that golf, for instance, have knee pain. People that ski have knee pain. So is knee pain something that is typical for running? I would say no. If you ask me which are the locations where you have most of the injuries during running, it's the knee. So the knee is loaded heavily during running, and if you do certain things wrong, there is always a problem that you can have knee injuries. And no, the question is then, are we made for running? I mean, you can calculate the forces or estimate the forces in the knee joint, in the ankle joint, in the hip joint. And if you calculate the forces during walking and compare them to running, then you would say maybe we are more made for walking than for running, or running in a rather slow pace. There's a running style where you make shorter steps than normal. It's called the pose style. And they have claimed, and I think they have evidence for that they have less knee injuries than the other running styles. So if knee injuries are a problem in running for people that run, I would suggest to them to try to run with shorter steps, you know, higher frequency steps, but shorter, maybe 30% shorter than normal. That gives a completely different running style. It's more like shuffling. And that seems to be very advantageous with respect to knee injuries. But I think, you know, the forces in the knee joint are one of the reasons that most people stop running. You don't see people that of my age, and with 85, running anymore. You see very few, but very, very, very few. And a lot of people that were running intensively in the 50s don't run anymore in the 70s. And the reason are the knees. So is there some evidence? I think there's some indirect evidence that knee injuries are a problem in running. And I would suggest change the running style to short steps.
Okay. And could there be a guidance on how short should these be? Should it be like what you said, about 30% shorter than where you are if you are having an issue? Or there is a stride length that is generally recommended for people to stay safe?
You know, about 30% or something like that, a third shorter, that would make sense. It has to become a shuffling type of movement, not a running type of movement where you go like that. It has... shuffle like that.
Understood. And could these also be that the runners, for example, that you were talking about, like what you said, as you grow older, you don't see many people running, but they may have been very active in the early, say, 40s, 50s, etc. Could it be that it's overuse and so there are injuries cropping up, and is there a more systematic way of being safe?
I don't know of any studies like that. But I would speculate that I think it's independent of the running style. the injuries. I mean, old people get injured, and it's just a question of aging. You know, we are not made to run with 100.
Right. Understood. And as you also said that as you reduce your stride length, say by a third, that might mean, just for people's understanding, that they increase their turnover, their cadence per minute is increasing. So the quicker turnover could mean that there are lesser chances of they getting injured.
Yeah.
Understood. Okay. And sir, towards the end, last question, that is there a need for the runners to focus on strengthening their foot muscles or lower extremities to stay injury free, or to be biomechanically slightly different than how they were as they were starting, etc., for longevity of running, for example?
Yeah, I think that is, as a matter of fact, is the last topic you said, but it's the most important one. Let me tell you a story. I was working with, I'm originally Swiss, and I was working with the Swiss national team on track and field and the runners. And one day I got a phone call from the champion over 5, 10, and I think 3,000 meters. So he was long distance champion, basically. Very good runner, international level. It was his last season. He was a professional athlete. And I have been in contact with him before for different other things. And he told me, "You have to help me." I said, "What is the problem?" And he said, "I have Achilles tendon problems. And it is terrible. I have pain. Whatever I do, I have done everything that I can. I have done physiotherapy. I have done orthotics, everything you could think of, I have done. The pain is there, and the pain is very heavy. I cannot really move, and it's my last season. Please help me." So I asked him a few questions. The one question I said, "Is it on the outside of the Achilles tendon or on the inside?" And he said, "It's on the outside." Then I said, "You know, I will be in Switzerland next week, and why don't we meet and I look at you?" And I told him, "I'm not a medical doctor. You know, I'm a physicist. As a matter of fact, I'm an astrophysicist. So I'm not a medicine man. But, you know, I can think about it and see whether maybe something may be important." At the same time, we had done some studies, and we had done some studies where we looked at the strength of the small muscles crossing the ankle joint. The ankle joint has about 10 muscle groups, and they are, with the exception of the quadriceps, the gastrocnemius, they are all rather small. And we had come to the conclusion that the strength of these small muscles crossing the ankle joint is important. Because what they can do, these muscles, they can react quicker than the big muscles. They have sometimes better levers to react. And if you want to balance yourself and get stability during your locomotion, during running or jumping, whatever, that is important, that you can balance yourself very quickly. Otherwise, the forces are too big. If these muscles are weak, the internal forces in the Achilles tendon are something like 20, 30 times body weight. Now, that's a huge force. Tons, you know. So I went there and checked his ankle joint and came to the conclusion that his ankle joint muscles were weak. So I gave him a plan to drain, and nothing else than drain these muscles, isometrically, dynamically, you name it. He did everything. But he did it about 2 hours a day. After 3 weeks, he called me and he said, problem is solved, I trained full again. And after 6 weeks after that, he participated in the European Championship, and he was fourth. So the problem was solved. And the only thing we did, we strengthened the small muscles crossing the ankle joint. And that is one of the most important things. If you have problems anywhere in your lower extremities, I suggest that in 50% of the cases, very hard training of the small muscles crossing the ankle joint will solve the problem. And the training has to be in all directions. You know, you rotate, three rotations, three translations, in all directions. Intensive, isometric, isotonic, dynamic, whatever, at least an hour a day. And most of the problems of the lower extremities can be solved like that.
Wow.
This is a wow, yeah.
And is there, I'm so curious and excited hearing about this. Is there any guidebook or videos or anything that you or your team may have put together somewhere that, or that you could guide us to if we were to look at distributing that to our listeners for people to understand?
Some of the things that I told you are in this book.
Right. Biomechanics of Sports Shoes.
Yeah. That is the newest and most complete, but it is not new. It's 10 years old or 13 years old now. And we think about writing something new, but it's, you know how that is. A lot of work.
So people can possibly purchase this book. I'll look up on Amazon or other places and see where it's available in India, and we can provide the link in the show notes as well, and possibly people can get their hands on this. Is also an ebook available for this?
No, we don't have that. Just a hard copy, and the only place that you can buy it is our lab.
Oh,
so
okay.
You have to write to nick@ucalgary.ca. nick@ucalgary.ca.
We will write today itself. At least I can request one copy for us, and then we can plan for. I'm sure there'll be a lot of requests after listening to this podcast. People will be definitely interested, and it will just help them such a great deal as you told me about it. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and you know that's the reason why I still work. I mean, it's so much fun and so much new things and so much different thinking outside the box, which is really exciting.
Yeah, right. Sir, there is so much of knowledge and information in the last 40 minutes that I personally have I've learned, and thank you so much for that. You accepting to be on the podcast is itself an honor for us, and this will serve us a great deal and to our listeners, and we're very thankful you could spend this time with us today. Before you go, is there anything else that you'd want to add to our listeners who are runners who want to continue to stay injury free and keep running safe?
No, just don't overdo it. You know, everything that is comfortable, I think, is good. If you buy a pair of shoes, they should be comfortable. If you run, the speed should be comfortable. Everything should be comfortable. So comfort is the best measure that we have to see whether we do the right thing. If it is not comfortable, stop doing it.
Yeah. No, makes absolute sense. So thank you so much for being here today. It was a great pleasure to have you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And I hope I could help the one or the other person.
It was very helpful. Have a good day. The conversation was great, isn't it? I enjoyed this conversation. Did you? I think it was great to hear him breaking down various components of feet and what it takes for you to move better. And actually, if you see, it's not as difficult. It's very natural. It's very simple. We just like to make it complicated, isn't it? I would want you to listen to this conversation again if there are concepts that have not been very clear to you, and you will learn a bit more. Also, there is a lot more in the show notes of this conversation, and you should refer to it for certain research to know more about some of the content that Dr. Benonick has produced, including his book, his other achievements, etc. And if you are someone who likes to geek out on content, this is your ocean of enjoyment right away. Let's meet next week again and keep listening to Run With Whitpage. Bye.